The old Arnold estate. Due to its truly haunting nature, it has become the starting point to an entire film universe. They say The Conjuring is based on a true story, but what is that true story? Today we dive into the ghostly history of The Conjuring House. This is Red Web. Welcome back, Task Force, to another episode of Red Web, the podcast all about unsolved mysteries, true crime, the supernatural. I'm losing it because I'm talking about The Conjuring House today. I am your resident mystery enthusiast, ghost extraordinaire, host with the ghost, Trevor Collins. That's a new, I'm just trying new things here at the end.
No better time to try something new than at the end.
And joining me, hearing about this topic, definitely not for the first time, but maybe the true story for the first time, Alfredo Diaz.
The Conjuring series.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some bangers in it.
It's got some ups and some downs.
It definitely has some downs, but the first two have been pretty. They're pretty solid. They're terrifying movies, and it spanned a whole universe.
Absolutely.
So getting into, I'm assuming Ed and Lorraine Warren.
The Warrens. Yeah,
the Warrens. I'm excited. This is not what I pictured. Uh-huh. I know we talked about, you know, possible like visiting the house and all that kind of stuff. And we've been talking about that for a long time. So I guess I just created this image in my head.
Yeah.
And so this looks nothing like it.
It looks nothing like it.
This looks so secluded. And then also, you know, the films kind of like add to it.
Right.
From what I pictured. But yeah, this looks like we could explore this in 5 minutes.
Right. It doesn't look nearly as big and fancy as the movie is, but it is. It is a historic, they call it an estate. It looks a little bit like a log cabin on about 8 acres of land. It does. It is definitely spooky looking when you look at it going, this is secluded. Anything could happen.
So what is the current state and ownership of the place?
Oh, we'll get into all that.
Oh, okay,
but
perfect.
I'll jump the gun a little bit. It is now run currently as like a hotel. Kind of like a B&B sort of situation. And that's of like recent years. But we'll talk about the change in ownership, the history of this house and everything. But as I joked about at the top, and now I want to talk about now that it's been a minute since our podcast update, Red Web is under the Rooster Teeth umbrella, and we have been informed that Rooster Teeth is being shut down. And because of that, that has put some interesting questions into the air for Red Web, but we have at least one fact. We want to continue. We want to do this show moving forward. We don't know if it can be called Red Web. There are legalities and things that we are looking into and trying to figure things out. But we do know we want to do something. And if you follow us anywhere, whether it's our personals or on Red Web, we'll make sure to let you know where to find us in the future. We're going to run this podcast out till April 22nd is our final episode. And then we're probably going to have a few weeks off as we figure things out, finalize things, and then make a big splash to try to tell you where to go, how to support us, and where we will be if not in the same home. So just wanted to put that out there. Still, again, figuring things out. But thank you all for the constant emails and the comments and everything, constantly supporting the show and letting us know that wherever we go, you're ride or die task force.
Yeah, I'm excited. And it's cool seeing that the task force is excited as well. So just hang in there, task force. You might have to walk into the same building or maybe have to walk into a different building.
It's a good excuse to remodel again, you know? Tear this thing down and build it back up.
You're used to the remodeling.
Right.
Okay? You're not going to be confused. You'll know where to go.
The pool is going to move. And that's just a fact, no matter what happens. So anyway, we'll continue to remind you. We'll be annoying about it over the next couple of weeks. But again, just truly floored by the ongoing support. Everybody on this show, from Fredo, myself, Christian, and Jillian, have all received amazing DMs and comments and just like a lot of how can we support? And that means the world.
Not to mention Nick, the unsung hero.
Oh, yeah. And Nick as well.
Beautiful editor of the podcast.
We call him Nick Bot. He's not AI. He's a real man. It's time to break that illusion. He's not here. Like,
he can't make his own robot noises.
He might splice it in. We don't know. All right. But with that said, I do really eagerly want to dive into the history of the Conjuring House. Because like as we do wind the podcast down, there's a few topics that I would felt remiss if we didn't approach. This is just the perfect combination of movie, which we, you know, we love movies.
We talk about a lot of movies.
We love our movies. And the supernatural, people experiencing ghosts, and also just like history. I just love history. This is a very old place. So
I'm assuming, since it's kind of like an Airbnb, that they marketed it as the Conjuring House, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh,
yeah. That's okay. Good.
You can go to check them out. They're called the Old Arnold Estate. That's where you can find them. That's what they're referred to as. But when you go there, they're not shy about the connection, the history. You can book it right then and there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's probably beneficial for them, but also I wouldn't want to book a place and then find out that it's a notoriously scary place.
Right.
You know, like, come on.
Oh, I'm going to get this nice, lovely bed and breakfast in the
you're saying New that England place? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean that place?
Let's see if you come back. Yeah. Who are you? There's a pirate.
There's a pirate.
Okay, so the house, as you can tell now, I've jumped all over my outline, but the house featured in the Conjuring film was initially and is currently still known as the Old Arnold Estate. It has been in Rhode Island since 1736. I left the script as it was because, contrary to popular belief, most houses don't just pop up, run away. This one is still here in Rhode Island. 1736, that's 288 years that house has been kicking it.
That's wild. And I'm sure we'll find out when they take over ownership, the Warrens, but
we've got houses younger than me here cracking foundations and falling apart. What happened with build quality anyway?
They got faster.
They got faster, yeah. So the land the house is on is very close to the Massachusetts border. A little joke here. If you're in Rhode Island, you're close to any border. It's a very small state. It was purchased from colonist minister Roger Williams, who had received the land from Canonicus, chief of the Narragansett, as part of what would become Rhode Island. The Richard family became one of the first colonists of Rhode Island on the land, followed by the Arnolds by marriage, who stayed for eight generations. Present day, the three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath farmhouse is in the village of Harrisville, which resides in Burrillville, Rhode Island, and it has about 8 acres of land surrounding it. Many point out that the house has survived multiple wars, multiple generations of families, and so the house or the land itself may have supernatural aspects or has been filled with ghosts. Not ancient, but historic places like this do seem to gravitate those types of stories and then entities that follow.
I can't believe this place was like owned for eight generations. Like, that's just something that's not really common nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine having a place where it's like, yeah, eight generations of us
eight
like live here.
Generations.
Nah, people scatter nowadays.
Right. Someone's willing to pay the buck. And so, you know, grandson is going to go, college expensive. Gonna
cash
sell the
in.
House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in January of 1971, the Perrins and their five daughters moved into the Arnold Estate. I believe they bought it maybe in December of 1970. Soon after moving in, the family noticed items around the house going missing. Nothing too wild. They have five daughters, but eventually this pattern seemed to grow, and even the daughters were like, well, what's going on with these things?
Gnomes.
Mm-hmm. Ghouls of our grandparents' age.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't done an episode of gnomes.
That's actually a really good point.
Like, there's got to be something weird there with gnomes.
We got to come back with
some
gnomes.
Some kind of weird cryptid story with gnomes.
Now, in the instances where items were found, they were usually discovered in different areas around the house, having been moved seemingly by random into different rooms where they didn't belong. Again, that does still feel like maybe children running around, moving stuff, but it stood out to the family. Much like other hauntings we've covered, the family also noticed dirt piles throughout the house, even after having just mopped or swept the floor. Reportedly, Roger, the father, was the only family member brave enough to go into the house's dirt cellar when repairs to the heater were needed. He usually avoided it if he could, because he said when he went down there, it often felt very cold, very uncomfortable, and also smelled of rotting flesh. When he would return to the main house, sometimes the cellar door would open suddenly on its own. Similarly, when the girls would play in the attic, sometimes the door would close on its own and lock them inside.
No, hell no.
Yeah. The door eeks closed on you, and then you just hear the little rattle of the lock shift closed.
This house ain't that big. I'm out.
I'm going out the window or kicking the door down? I'll jump out that window.
Window first? I'll bust an ankle. I'm locked in.
But what if you kick it? You got good, strong feet now.
I do.
You've been working out.
I feel like I bust my butt no matter which way. Jumping out the window, I'm, you know, messing up an ankle, kicking the thing. I don't know.
Messing up an ankle,
a knee or whatever. But I mean, I'm gone and I'm setting the house on fire. It looks like it's easily set on fire.
Oh, absolutely. That's the old spider in the cabinet protocol. Just burn it all down.
I just wouldn't, man. Like, I don't know. You got weird stuff like that going on and then all of a sudden doors are locking. It's just going to get worse, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to just get better.
I'm always so surprised when families just kind of become accustomed to those sort of things.
I'm like, stories.
Oh, that's normal. The door closes and locks us in all the time. Like, I don't know if I'd get comfortable with that.
Yeah, there's families that have, or even we've done episodes where people are like, yeah, you know, we just kind of lived with it for years. And I'm like, hell no.
Yeah. No, no.
No.
So along with these oddities, some of the parents saw several instances of ghosts and visions of what they came to assume were the previous residents of the house. So let's break down kind of quickly what some of those entities were. You had the first group of three spirits. They would always appear together as a father, son, and a dog, always seen at the top of the stairs leading to the second floor.
Oh, very rarely we talk about ghost dogs.
I need more ghost dogs in these stories. If the house was haunted with just a bunch of pets, I'm chilling. You know, then the doors can open and close. They're just nosing their way
in. That's true.
Dogs don't lock doors, though.
Well, at least, no, they don't.
Oh, no. What if it's a demon kind of like trying to get cozy in with you by pretending to be a dog?
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Oh, God.
Christian hated that. So that was the first group, always seen at the top of the stairs leading to the second floor. And then Andrea, the eldest daughter of the five, claimed to have seen a ghost of herself. But this iteration of herself was kind of in historic clothing, maybe like 18th century clothing. Very, how would you feel if you saw yourself?
Honestly, my brain would break. Because you have like your normal, kind of like your normal thoughts of how it's supposed to go, right? Like if you got haunted tonight,
mm-hmm.
You have some preconceived notions of how that's supposed to go.
Right.
If I start seeing myself, I don't know. If I start seeing a ghost dog, I'm confused. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, you're throwing some new stuff at me.
Right.
I don't know how to handle this. Not that I knew how to handle it in the first place, right. But like now I really don't know.
That's a great premise to a movie. You just go like, oh, we're going to hang out in the haunted house tonight. We know what haunted, what to expect. And then you see a doppelghost. And you're like, wait a minute, this is not at all what I expected. And then it goes off in a totally different direction.
Yep.
Mm.
Okay,
another commonly seen ghost was a woman with a broken neck.
Oh, no.
Yeah. April, the youngest of the daughters, saw a boy in her closet. This, I believe, was actually in some form seen in the Conjuring movie.
Right? Because there was the noise in the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's like I don't know, the entity sat up on top, like the woman. Ooh, that scene freaked me out. But she saw this young boy in her closet. She found out his name was apparently Oliver Richardson and they became friends. She kept their friendship secret from the family for quite some time. We don't really know how long, but that's as the story goes.
See, now, I don't like that. Because now you have like secret, I don't know, that's just, you got to get out of the house. Right. Now, I feel like if I have kids, I got to just like bring them into a room and interrogate them. You got any secret friends? I know. I know you got a secret friend. I heard you. And you're like, no, I don't have one.
That's how
like,
you make them
right,
secret.
Cool. He didn't break. He has no secret. He has no secret friends. We're good. I can't be having, my kids can't be talking to ghosts. Okay.
You got to show them a lot of these movies. A lot of them feature kids thinking they have like imaginary friends.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, me and my sister would tell my dad that we saw faces in the ceiling all the time. And I don't know why we stayed in that place we were living at.
If I told my
we did it multiple times.
And we go on ghost hunts with this person. Yeah.
He's a vector. He attracts them.
Oh, he does run off with you though.
That's true. Wait, no, you're still the vector, I think. It can't be me.
You don't need to go that far.
Because when I was alone, he was with you, and that's when you had flashlight situations happening with USS Horn.
Oh, that's true.
That did happen.
Yeah. Now, the kitchen appeared to be the most active place in the house, with Carolyn once cutting into an orange that oozed blood, and the daughters seemed to consistently see a strange woman in the window of the kitchen. These are all deeply unsettling things that we're just kind of accepting as normal, it seems. Now, reportedly, their beds would often be lifted off the ground, particularly Carolyn's, who is the mother. Whatever entity was causing this kind of strange occurrence seemed to focus more on Carolyn. Some of these seem to be apparitions. It's just something to see. But this one in particular seems to be messing with things physically. Yeah. And it seems to focus on her. And it even reportedly attacked her. One night, Carolyn felt what she believed to be a muscle spasm in her calf while laying on the couch. And when she looked down, she saw blood on her leg, but couldn't figure out the source of it or what caused this.
Get out of the house. Also, yeah. I mean, it mirrors the movie because the mom, that was the one that was, she was like possessed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like it. I don't. There's just way too much here. I just don't understand. Look, people are just built different, I guess. Or I don't know the situation. Maybe they couldn't move, but I'd sleep outside on the floor. There's no way. You got like a, is this connected? I'm looking at like the two, looks like there's like a primary house and then, I mean, it's bigger than a shed, but it looks like there's two buildings.
I believe they are connected.
Yeah, it does look, yes, it is. Yeah.
I mean, there is a main house.
But, yeah, it is connected. It's just weird seeing them offset. So I'm looking at, we're looking at like two essentially like huge cabins, but they're offset. So it's just weird because like if you go between the two, there's, I guess, a narrow entrance as opposed to the whole house.
Yeah. So that gap where one half seems smaller and one seems bigger could be, and I don't know the order, Christian's looking into it now, but like which side was added onto. I believe one side is like the original and the other has been added on at some point.
Oh, I mean, that's true. This has been around for a long time, so they probably just built upon it.
Well, Christian looks into that. I want to go back to Carolyn, who kind of looked into the history of this house. She's experiencing all this extra stuff, and so she's going, okay, well, is there a reason for this? And she found evidence in the Black Book of Burrillville that many of the previous owners died in tragic ways. This book contains a list of deaths in this area, and while many of the stories are true in this text, some historians have pointed out that not all of these are true. So basically, one can't just assume that everything in this black book is true and that, you know, they could be fabrications or exaggerations or what have you. Basically, it's not a de facto point of evidence.
Yeah.
But to cite some of the things that she found, there were multiple accidents, drownings, and suicides on the Arnold estate. Susan Arnold ended her own life at the age of 93. Prudence Arnold was sexually assaulted and murdered in 1849, and John A. Arnold ended his life in 1911.
Oof. It's bad juju on these grounds.
A lot happening. But also, you know, let's see, 93. I don't know what year that would have been.
That's very interesting that someone would, I mean, you know, you could spend your life at any point in time. But it's usually not at the age of 93.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, we don't know the nature of it, if it's grief or otherwise, you know. But it is interesting. I mean, again, we don't know how much is true and how much is not, but like these three incidences seem relatively far apart. I think it's just going to happen when you go back far enough in a place that's old enough.
That's true.
Some death will happen.
Yeah, if you had a place that's there for hundreds of years, then yeah, of course.
Yeah, but these are more violent, right? Not natural death or anything,
right.
But anyway, before we go on to the Warrens, Christian, was there anything you found about house expansion or remodeling or anything? Because I did a cursory glance earlier and I didn't see too much.
Yeah, nothing that I can find, at least in the moment. So maybe, I mean, there's a chance that it wasn't an expansion. That's just the original building. Yeah, I'm not finding anything on it.
It's pretty big for, you know, mid to late 1700s, but also it's two rectangles.
Yeah.
So relatively simple. But with that, let's move into the Warren investigation.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. So the attacks on Carolyn got so bad that the parents finally reached out for help in 1973 and in 74. They contacted Ed and Lorraine Warren, a paranormal investigator couple that founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, or NESPR. Ed claimed to be a demonologist, while Lorraine claimed to be a medium. A lot of skepticism surrounds this couple. There's a lot of, you know, times where they've made things worse or they've perhaps been out for their own attention, their own profit, for example. That's a whole different topic, but I do at least want to explore their involvement in this case and how it either helped or didn't.
They were very like public about what they were doing.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a business mindset there.
I mean, you got the whole film franchise.
Yeah, and they were doing interviews and everything like that. So, I mean, they definitely were like, okay, we could this is what we specialize in, but we can make this a business.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just like a, you know, they're going around handing out pro bonos and charity cases and just being like, hey, we're here to help. Mm-hmm. But also like, yeah, I mean, I can see how they make it worse, because how do you really even know, like, who writes the book on this thing? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I have no clue. You know what I mean? If a vampire were to enter this room right now.
Impossible. I wouldn't allow it.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't invite them in.
But see, who knows? Is that how that works?
Right. They just come in. They right. go, that's nothing.
Trevor's like, I don't invite you in. And just steps right in.
And then they rip at me and right in my neck.
Yeah. You know, start throwing holy water, bring up crosses. But like, you don't know if that's true or not. Or
that could be Dracula propaganda.
Oh, Dracula 3000.
Whoa. You know?
Future Dracula movie. We'll write that. We don't need to get crazy. We can just write like, slop.
It'll be like the Kwisatz Haderach, but of vampires. Yeah. We're going to spread this like this propaganda for millennia. And then when we show up in the year 3000, they're going to be all screwed up.
Yeah, well.
Wrong rules. Yeah. We love garlic. Steaks don't matter. Hearts don't beat, you know? Yeah, I mean, it could easily make things worse because... Again, this is kind of the center of the drama. A lot of the families do believe in what they're experiencing. And sometimes when they come in, they are trying to help, but sometimes they can make it worse by painting a darker image. So instead of trying to find the real causes, sometimes it can only spur on more negative emotions and more tumult for the family. But with that said, the Warrens have investigated a plethora of other haunted locations, notwithstanding the Amityville Horror House, another haunted house case, as well as the Annabelle doll, both of which we've discussed here on the show. So Andrea told Providence Journal in 2013 that, quote, Lorraine stepped into the kitchen and said, I feel a dark presence, and her name is Bathsheba. The Warrens believed that an angry spirit or witch was attacking the Perrin family and haunting the house. The witch's name, as they said, was Bathsheba Sherman, which I did kind of a quick look into that name to see if it was a real person, to see what I could find. And I'll continue on with the outline in a second, but what I found was the story that has both fact and fiction melded together behind a woman who was born in the early 1800s in the Massachusetts area. And that this is where fiction starts to step in, where they were either working with or related to someone who was, or a descendant of, a woman who was hanged as part of the Salem witch trials. So again, there is a person with that name who lived kind of in the area, but the history is a little bit of a reach. It's hard to know. But coming back to the case and the Warrens' take on this, it is said that Sherman killed her children in a cult-like sacrifice with a needle. Lorraine believed that Carolyn was attacked with that same needle. In 1974, the Warrens brought a medium to the home to conduct a seance. Questions kind of still out. Christian and I were both asking, like, why not Lorraine if she was the medium? But it seemed they brought an external viewpoint in. In the film, this is actually done via an exorcism. It's portrayed rather than a seance as an exorcism. But in reality, during that seance, the spirit again attacked Carolyn. According to Andrea, her mother was thrown across the room and possessed by some sort of spirit. Carolyn spoke in a language that she had never heard before, and after the seance ended, Carolyn suffered from a concussion. Soon after, Roger Perrin kicked the Warrens out of the house. Carolyn told Providence Journal in 2013, quote, the Warrens tried to help, but we essentially found things got worse with them around. The Perrins continued to live in the house until 1980 without any major known incidents.
What?
So it seemed like everything kind of settled down after that big climax.
Yeah, was the spirit just like, all right, if you're going to bring in the big guns, then I'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. That or they were like, okay, it got riled up when we started poking at it. Let's just not poke at it. Live our lives and then eventually move out.
But even then, I feel like they weren't poking at it to begin with. And then
I guess, they were just trying to talk to it.
So that's the funny, there's no official rule set on this stuff. You know what I mean? There's no rules or regulations.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, who's to say that it didn't just stop, but it just seems, I don't know, there's not a good enough reason for this to stop to me.
Yeah, it's interesting that pretty soon after moving in, they experienced stuff. And then after this, there's not really much for years, and then they moved. But with that, let's kind of dive into the theories. It's not really theories as much as it's dissecting the believing angle and the skeptical angle. So let's start with the kind of believing. So in 2019, what is known as the Conjuring House was purchased by Corey and Jennifer Heinzen, another paranormal investigator couple. They believe that the home is still haunted. Jacqueline Nunez actually bought the home from them in 2022, but the Heinz's daughter is still the caretaker of the place. Now, the website mentions, quote, native tribes remained embedded in the land, end quote, that also haunt the estate, possibly due to the land being previously owned by indigenous groups. They and many visitors have reported continued sightings of ghosts and other paranormal experiences on the property, which is now a museum and hotel. It does seem that a lot of stories go back to witches or indigenous peoples or cultures and religions that they don't understand.
Yep.
That's got to be, that's it.
That's the reason why.
Mm-hmm. The website for the house also shares a couple of stories of two commonly seen ghosts. One is Abigail Cook Arnold, who is often seen cooking or making preserves. Lovely decision. Not jelly. Goodness gracious, be done with that. Not jam. That's okay. Preserves. Got the chunks of fruit in it. Anyway, I'd love some ghost preserves. She could be heard in the basement warning visitors to, quote, get out. The other ghost mentioned on the site is called Matthew Kay, who apparently never lived at the house, but simply ended up there after going, as they say, quote, towards the light. This must have been through some sort of spirit box or seance. This is,
or it could just been one of those portal hotspots that we talked about in one of our episodes.
That is exactly what the Warrens believe, that this is a kind of portal. I'll actually quote Andrea Perrin, because she argues this, quote, a portal cleverly disguised as a farmhouse. And because of that, that's why she thinks this Matthew Kay might have landed or ended up at the Arnold Estate. Though other people believe that it's very common for ghosts to end up at places like this if they spent a large sum or a significant portion of their lives there.
Oh. Yeah, I could see that. Maybe just revert back to where, like, it's familiar to you.
Yeah. That, or it's like you left kind of a residual impression in time.
Yeah.
Or ghosts are just some sort of fourth dimensional connection to the past, like all of time's happening all at once in some dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, this sounds a bit pseudoscience, but it's viable in some sense that we could be in this room, but 100 years ago, something else was happening right here, and those energies may be
crossed. How sometimes we talk about echoes.
Yeah. There's no way to scientifically prove that at this moment, but it's a fascinating theory that intrigues me. I would love to be able to prove that, but...
So, I mean, the thing I talked about is before, but I mean, I guess like as time goes on, the echoes, like if we were to go on a ghost hunt and then disappear, like this is a familiar place for the three of us. Would we just be an echo of like us podcasting here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I go in the room and I hear laughter.
Or like the people that are on TikTok that are NPCs. Like that would suck if that was the echo that lived in your house. Yum. Yum.
Oh my God. I went to this New York street corner. Vlog 21, the year 2198. The location, street corner in New York. Ghost evidence. Spirit box says, thanks for roses. for roses.
Right? Because like, I don't, I mean, that's what it would be nowadays.
Yeah, that's true.
That sucks.
We get warnings, you know, we get scratches. What if in the future there's not warnings of getting out? It's more just like, stop the stream. I need to eat.
Dude, yeah. I mean,
thanks
like,
for the roses.
Yeah. Like, oh, I mean, like every night
live.
At 1 o'clock, this ghost goes live in my living room and
you
streams.
Know
like I'm,
if we got influencer ghosts, I'm here for it.
But
what brands are the ghosts talking about?
That's true. But also like if echoes of ghosts are real, that's, you know,
yeah,
that would be echo.
Yeah, that's true. I think a big, you know, counterpoint to all that is, why is it when you go, you could go internationally, it seems to be, I'm centering my mindset right now on American television, so English, but why is it when you go international, especially when you look historically, people aren't speaking English, why is it that a lot of the times the ghosts are speaking English?
Yeah, true.
Sometimes, not always, right? But I have seen that where like, they'll go to like an old castle in France and you're like, they're not going to be speaking English there.
No, they
probably
wouldn't.
But
that adds an extra layer of just frustration then.
Bilingual ghosts?
Yeah, because it's like, oh, I have a ghost that's messing up my life. which is terrible. But then also, I can't understand a word they're saying.
Oh, no.
I'd be like, I can't slow down. Type Google Translate isn't going fast enough. Like, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, when English is old and done, and we, like, in 500 years have a different iteration of it, maybe they'll hear our laughter, but they won't get our jokes here in this room.
That's true.
But let's go with the skeptical angle, because we're kind of tiptoeing into that direction. So while Bathsheba Sherman was a real person, she never lived exactly in the Arnold Estate area, but instead the neighboring farm on Old Harrisville Road. So it seemed odd that she would be haunting this particular swath of land. Again, you could make the same point about Matthew Kay with Bathsheba, you know, but someone said that Bathsheba hanged herself in the estate's barn, though her obituary states that she died of, quote, paralysis. She was also likely falsely accused of being a witch since she had a religious burial. But Joe Nickel of Skeptical Inquirer wrote in 2016 that he found many of the tragic deaths of residents did not actually occur in the house or even on the estate grounds. So now we have somebody actually going back, fact-checking some of this stuff and being like, no, most of this stuff didn't happen. As far as like the deaths, the stories like in the Black
Book.
On
the property.
Yeah. Though again, you could argue that ghosts could haunt any location at any time. If you spent the time there, it's the same thing again that we said about Matthew Kay. It's also possible that some parts of the parents' story were exaggerated in order to make money, right? In which case, I point to Andrea selling her book called House of Darkness, House of Light, and that has three volumes starting in 2011. I think she made one each year, 2011, 12, and 13. So it's kind of a long con to wait for almost 30 years to sell a book. But again, it's something you gotta bring up because everyone's got a story to tell, especially when the Conjuring movies are coming online and it's blowing up. There are
ways to capitalize on
ways to capitalize. Monetization happening and
yeah, I mean I could see that, right? Like we have our little podcast, we do some like side stuff, a part of Redweb that are bigger like case files, you know, we have our ghost hunts, but if we were to like find something and all of a sudden we're writing a Redweb book and you know, rightfully so, people would be like, I don't know if I believe that.
It'd be like, well, you know, I felt like I was touching the arm, but you know, maybe it was like a muscle spasm or maybe it was just like one of the gear. But instead I made it into I was grabbed by a ghost and thrown across the room. And I mean, so again, that's a conversation that you always have to have in these moments. Like I want to suspend disbelief because I'm fascinated by what could be.
And it's fun.
It's very fun. But also you have to look at it pragmatically too. Is there an incentive to exaggerate the story for attention? Or is there a desire to soften the story? You know, everyone's got an angle, right? The other fact of the matter is that we're only really aware of Andrea and Carolyn's perspectives, as the other family members didn't really share their experiences publicly, and as far as we could find anyway, beyond what Andrea and Carolyn had shared. So if you see another family member talking about stuff, it's probably because their mom or their sister had already kind of talked about that.
Mm.
So Nickel, who was part of Skeptical Inquirer, also theorized that Carolyn's belief in the paranormal influenced the parents' daughters, and possibly after the threat of divorce, Roger came around to the idea of, again, leaning into the paranormal of what's happening around. Therefore, the ghost boy, Oliver, may have simply been an imaginary friend, but because of the belief of the paranormal, might have evolved into it being an actual entity. Now, here's what's interesting. In 1987, the Arnold Estate was purchased by Norma and Jerry Sutcliffe. They had no experience with ghosts, but received many unwelcome visits after the Conjuring movie came out. So they were there for quite some time, relatively peacefully. No real spooky encounters to speak of. However, this is really interesting. The Sutcliffe said that the cellar door would open on its own, and the attic door would sometimes close and lock people in. Now, they believed that this was due to temperature fluctuations, warped doors. Of course, if it's being built in the late 1700s and lasting until now, it can easily warp or
deteriorate,
or just have different craftsmanship quality across the house. But they had a more pragmatic answer to it. But after all, this estate would be 200 years old by the point of them purchasing it.
Wow.
Let alone today.
Wow.
Yeah. It's possible that this was the reason they sold the house to the Heinzens in 2019. Again, that was a group of investigators, people that were much more enthusiastic about the place. And now, again, kind of thinking a little bit cynically now, it's okay. For a few years, it was in the hand of paranormal investigators.
Yep.
Now it's transitioned again, but now it's kind of like a museum plus a hotel plus a come investigate. So it has almost become an investment into the story. So again, the story begets money. And so that's not to say that the story isn't real, you know, for the people that believe. But for me, it gives me at least a little pause to think a little bit more about it, if that makes sense.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it's turned into just kind of like a place for profit.
Yeah, but fascinating story nonetheless. And it certainly had its pull on us last year when we did a poll with you guys, Task Force, on if we were going to go here or if we were going to go to the USS Hornet for our Halloween special.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with how the USS Hornet came out because you finally started to get some stuff, some interesting experiences, but...
Surprisingly, though, everyone wanted the Hornet.
Yeah, I thought they were going to go hard on this.
House for sure.
Yeah, but the Hornet was definitely its own kind of beast.
Yes, it was.
And I walked away with a piece of Neil Armstrong.
You did.
And then, you know what? Even in this, the outline, it says, you know, spirits go to place of great import to them where they've spent significant time. And what's more significant than being rescued? You landed on the moon. You're kicking it on the moon. You come back to the earth. You land in the ocean and a boat picks you up. What's more significant than that boat saving you from your moon landing in the ocean?
I think
he's there, but guys, don't...
If he's there, he's mad about it. Well,
rest assured, he's no longer there if you visit the USS Hornet. I have exorcised Neil Armstrong from the premises. He now resides with me in a mason jar filled with M&Ms.
You know, take that with you.
It was a deleted scene. Because it was ridiculous.
It was because,
shattered the tone of the investigation, but he is with me.
But that's what this man did.
You might have seen him on the Case Files set.
Yeah.
I will have to make sure I grab him before he is owned by Warner. You know, if Warner Brothers wants a ghost, they can file him away. I gave our parent company a ghost. That's my book.
Take it.
Come on. Take it. Anyway, this has been a really interesting one, Fredo. Like, any closing thoughts? I know it's been a minute since you've probably seen the movie, but any other, like, parallels that you can identify between?
No, honestly, like, I thought there would be more about the Warrens and, like, their little room of trinkets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But was that just mostly movies?
No, that's real. Basically, every location they went to, they took a piece.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was because they were like, let's focus all the spiritual energy into this item and then take it.
Ugh, dangerous.
And then honestly, maybe that's why they continued to live there till 1980. Because even though they said the Warren's presence made it worse, maybe they felt a bit cleansed after they left.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's, and again, that could be psychosomatic or it could be real. But yes, they do have a museum. I think it recently moved. It was over in Connecticut. It might still be, but it was at their house on that property and has since moved. I'm seeing my fiance right now, but she actually went there as part of the Annabelle movie.
That's right.
Premiere.
And saw the doll.
Saw the doll in person.
That's too close.
I think she said, she was like, I didn't want to look at it. So I didn't. And I'm like, good on
that's
you.
That's good. That's smart.
Because they say not to make eye contact with the raggedy doll Ann that is Annabelle. And I'm like, but I'd be tempted, but I won't. But I will, but I won't.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't think Christian would look either.
I wouldn't go in the room. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, this guy would look.
There's so many stories of people leaving that property and ending up in, getting hurt or in accidents or something because they were fooling around, saying things around the doll they shouldn't. Again, we did a whole episode on it if you want a deep dive task force. But yeah, so they do have a lot of like tchotchkes and trinkets from, I mean, that would be a terrifying room to step into.
I just wouldn't.
How many mason jars filled with Neil Armstrong would it take to make it feel better? One.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna. That's what I'll do.
Bring your jar.
No one tell the Warrens estate owner, but I'm gonna bring Neil and put him in there.
This guy's gonna walk out with something.
I'm gonna be like, don't worry, I've done what the Warrens did, and I place it, and then I walk away. But there's like 15 dozen like spirits attached to me now.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, thank you, Task Force, for your ongoing support again. Listen and follow in the coming weeks for a solid update. A lot of things to kind of figure out legality-wise, but again, we still really want to do this show, so follow all of us individually on social media. I shouted them all out in the update, the 6 minute or so update that I did a few episodes ago, but in no particular order, we have at Alfredo Plays. I am at underscore Trevor C, the letter C. We have at X Chin Young,
mm-hmm.
Like a cross chin, like Chris Chin.
Mm-hmm.
It's clever.
Hey, and then, yeah, you got it. Yeah. No, not a lot of people do.
Oh, I got it. And then, of course, Jillian, our researcher, at underscore Jillen, J-I-L-L-E-N. And Nickbot, it's, I don't know the spelling.
Schwartz a knicker.
Schwartz a knicker.
Yeah.
Because it's Nick Schwartz.
Yeah.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. It's kind of like Arnold's last name a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so follow us all on our personals to know for a fact how else you can support us, because everybody else has other projects that they're doing and starting up and continuing. But also, just in case we lose access to social, that's where you will definitely hear where we continue and how to support. So again, thank you very much. And with that, Fredo, I'll see you right back here next Monday for yet another mystery.